turn to the book of Malachi, chapter 3. Book of Malachi, chapter 3. We'd like to read the first four verses. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. And the Lord whom ye seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant whom ye delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith the Lord of hosts. But who may abide the day of his coming? And who shall stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire, and like fuller's soap. And he shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. And he shall purify the sons of Levi, and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Lord an offering in righteousness. By way of background to the book of Malachi, really goes back to the Babylonian captivity. We learn from 2 Kings chapter 24 and verse 14 that Babylon took some 10,000 Israelites into captivity. In addition to that, they destroyed the temple that Solomon had built. They took the gold and the furnishings from that temple. After 70 years of captivity, the power of Babylon was broken, and leadership changed hands from the Babylonians to the Persians. And God would stir the king of Persia, Cyrus. He would stir his heart, and Cyrus would give permission to these captive Jews to return from their homeland. And from Ezra chapter 2, verses 64 and 5, we learn that some 50,000 returned. Again, 10,000 were taken into captivity, but after 70 years, they've grown. And some 50,000 returned to Jerusalem. And when they returned, everything, of course, had changed. The whole countryside was now in the hands of their enemies. And the once beautiful Jerusalem is basically in ruins. Nothing is like what it was. The temple is gone. The walls are torn down. And in their places is just rubble. In time, of course, the temple and the wall would be rebuilt under the leadership of Zerubbabel and Nehemiah. But the people that had returned became hardened in heart. They became rebellious toward God. And a spirit of irreverence, a spirit of ingratitude prevailed among the people. Very similar to what it was when they went into captivity. Worship once again became formal and insincere, and there was actually a contempt for God's altar, for God's glory, for God's law. It was basically a time of moral and spiritual darkness. And reading through the book of Malachi, you see, Malachi ministers to these people. He ministers to the people who had returned to their homeland. As you read through the book of Malachi, you see that the people had become thoughtless. They had become insensitive to God, indifferent toward God's ways, indifferent toward God's love, His blessings upon them. And they were now very selfish, very ungrateful, and even questioned the goodness of God to them. They had shrugged off what God had said to them. And they are very proud, they are very self-righteous. They're more interested in lip service and religious platitudes and formality than the real thing. These are the people that Malachi is preaching to, very much like our day. And Malachi's message was one of denunciation, and it was one of hope. So it is today. Message of denunciation, but also a message of hope. I want to take the thought of the message from something that we read in verse 2. He is like a refiner's fire. And in verse 3, he shall sit as a refiner. I want to speak this morning on Christ, the refiner of his people. First of all, we want to just look at the text, and then we want to make application of the text. But notice, our text opens with, behold, behold. That, of course, is a verb, so it indicates action, something that we are to do. It's in the imperative voice, therefore it's a command. It is a call. It is a call to do something. It is a call to ponder, to observe, to meditate, to give serious thought and careful consideration to what was to follow. It is a call to see and to know something. The word behold is used in the Word of God when something extraordinary or momentous is about to be presented to our attention. It is a word of exclamation. It is a word of wonder. Now, following the word behold, he speaks of three individuals. There's God the Father. I will send. That's God. I. He is later identified as the Lord of hosts. So you have God the Father. There is also John the Baptist. He is referred to, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way. Well, how do you know that that is John the Baptist? Well, those very words are used of him in Matthew 11, verse 10, Mark chapter 1, verse 2, Luke chapter 7, verse 27. So you have God the Father. You have John the Baptist. The third individual mentioned in our text is the central figure, Jesus Christ. Notice, and the Lord. And the Lord. That's Christ, the Messiah, whom ye seek. That is, they've been waiting for him. He's been promised throughout the Old Testament. Shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant. And then that is followed by another behold, followed by the statement, he shall come. Now, this is a prophecy concerning the incarnation of Jesus Christ. About 400 years later, Jesus Christ would come. But here in verse 1, we are informed of the manner of this coming. Again, referring to the incarnation. Suddenly. That speaks of soon, but it also speaks of unawares. And then there is a place referred to in which he would come. The temple. That, of course, was presented when, was fulfilled when Mary and Joseph presented Christ in the temple. We are also told here of something of the person of Jesus Christ. The fact that he was to be preceded by a messenger speaks of his greatness, speaks of his significance, speaks of his glory. This is also seen in the fact that he is referred to as the Lord, referring to the fact that He is God. Jesus Christ would come in the flesh, and He would be God. He would be the Creator and the Sustainer of all things, Almighty, immutable, omniscient, infinite. He is also called the Messenger of the Covenant. In other words, a messenger of peace. He would come bringing a message of peace. This speaks of grace, speaks of mercy. With regard to this coming of Christ, this incarnation, two questions are asked in verse 2. Who may abide the day of His coming? And who shall stand when He appeareth? These questions imply the seriousness of the coming. They imply the reverence in which His coming was to be viewed. It is also said of Him in verse 2, He is like a refiner's fire. When He comes, speaking of the incarnation, He would be like a refiner's fire. A refiner's fire was used to bring about a wonderful and beneficial difference. But a refiner's fire is controlled by the refiner, and it has a definite purpose. A refiner's fire does not destroy indiscriminately like a forest fire. And it does not consume completely like the fire of an incinerator. He is like a refiner's fire. The fact that He would not come as a forest fire or the fire of an incinerator speaks of His grace, speaks of His mercy. And thanks be unto God, when Jesus Christ, God in a body of human flesh, came, He came as a refiner's fire, not as a forest fire. A refiner's fire refines. It purifies. Jesus Christ came to refine. He came to purify. A refiner's fire melts down and separates out impurities. He would be like a refiner's fire. This is a word of hope. Notice that not only is He like a refiner's fire, but notice verse 3, He shall sit as a refiner and purifier. He's like a refiner's fire, and He shall sit as a refiner and a purifier. Jesus Christ would come to improve. He would come to perfect, not to destroy. This again is grace and mercy. Again, it is said of Jesus Christ, He's like a refiner's fire and as a refiner and purifier of silver. The metaphors and titles used of Christ speak of the fact that He meets the condition of the sinner. So let's think about this refiner. A refiner was a man whose occupation was to go out into the dungeons, into the dirt, into the pits, and he would go there to dig up precious metals, such as silver and gold. But there's a problem. There's a problem with the silver. There's a problem with the gold. The problem arises because they come out of the earth, which is under the curse of God. And this silver and this gold is always mingled with earthly matter, with earthly stuff. And these precious metals, they have flaws. They have imperfections. They have impurities. And these flaws and these imperfections and these impurities, they devalue the silver and the gold. The refiner has the ability to look beyond what that silver and gold is and its impurities and see what he's going to make it. Refiner has that ability. And before the refiner ever starts digging, he has something in mind for that silver or that gold. So you have the silver or the gold. It has flaws. It has imperfections. It has impurities. But the refiner, he wants to make it something valuable and useful and beautiful. And again, verse 3, and he, Christ, shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. Jesus Christ, Malachi says, would come. Again, speaking of his incarnation. And he would come to bring value and usefulness and beauty to the filthy sinner. He did not come to destroy, but he came to bring beauty to the sinner. Now the refiner has a process in which he accomplishes the refining. He has a large pot, and under that pot is a fire. Again, the refiner's fire. The refiner is in complete control of that fire. And he takes the silver, and he takes that silver with all of its flaws, with all of its imperfections, with all of its impurities, and he puts it into that pot. And the pot gets so hot that it begins to melt and to liquefy the silver. And the dross, the earthly matter and stuff, because it can't take the heat. Get that? That's another message. But that which is not real cannot take the heat. Why can't some who profess Christ take the heat? Because they're all dross. It's a different message. But it can't take the heat. So it rises to the top of that pot. And the refiner takes a long knife called a skimmer. And he takes and he begins to skim off all the stuff, the imperfections, and the impurities. And after he's skimmed all of that off, he turns up the fire a little hotter. And again, the stuff, the impurities, rise to the top. And again, the refiner skims off all the stuff. And he does it again, and again, and again. Keeps doing this process. He sits as a refiner. It takes great patience to be a refiner. It takes great perseverance. And Malachi says when Jesus comes, speaking of the incarnation, that he would be like that refiner's fire, that he would be like a refiner and purifier of silver. So how long does the refiner do this? How long does he continue with that process? Until he can see himself in that silver. It's now pure. And he can see himself. The refiner skillfully removes that which would ruin the value, but he leaves intact the silver and the gold. That's a skill. It's a skill, again, that takes much patience. He removes that which would ruin the value, but he leaves intact the silver or the gold. Now in our text, Malachi is telling the people of a coming refiner. Again, he's like a refiner's fire. He shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. This is a word of grace. It's a word of mercy. It's a word of hope. Now let's make application of the text. There, of course, is an immediate application to the context. At the end of chapter 2, verse 17, leading into our text, it is said that the people had wearied the Lord. They had wearied the Lord. How did they weary the Lord? By saying, everyone that doeth evil is good in the sight of the Lord, and he delighteth in them. So this was the mindset of the people. Since God had not come upon them in judgment, he must approve of how they were living. It didn't make any difference whether we do evil or whether we do good. God hasn't judged us. God must approve. And they were asking there in verse 17, where is the God of judgment? Malachi, you say he's going to judge us for our sins. Where is he? Doesn't seem that it matters to God what we do. They are saying, we have been hearing of God coming in judgment. Malachi, where is he? If God so disapproves of what we're doing, why doesn't he judge us? Oh, and people have that same attitude today. They lived in denial that the Lord would ever put a difference between them. And this leads into our text. Malachi foretelling of the coming Messiah. He is telling them that when Jesus comes, he will separate the impure from the pure. That's why the Pharisees couldn't stand him. He would separate the false from the true. He would put a difference between truth and error, between righteousness and wickedness. You see, wherever Jesus comes, he does these things because he's a refiner. And though it was a time of moral degradation, God had a people that he would refine. And that is still true today. God always has people, no matter how bad it gets, in which he refines. There is also application concerning the Lord's gracious and merciful work in his people. as a refiner's fire, and he shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. For you and I are saved. Jesus Christ, the refiner, came to the pit and the dungeon that we were in. David speaks of this in Psalm 40 and verse 2. He said, he brought me up also out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay. You see, we were in a very dreadful place, the pit of sin. It's a vile place. It's an unspeakable place. It's a place of darkness, a place of desolation. It's a place of alienation and deprivation. It's a place of decay and ruin. A place of degeneracy and wickedness. It's a place of helplessness and danger. It's a place of entrapment and gloom and misery. David refers to it as a place of miry clay. Thick, heavy, deep mud and sludge, conveying the idea of filth and vileness and pollution and contamination. And there we were in the depths, in the darkness, in the gloom, in the misery and the imprisonment of sin. And we were descending further and further into this pit. We could not escape by our own efforts. There was no human arm long enough or strong enough to bring us up from this pit. And no amount of mental faculty could figure a way out of this pit. But there's a refiner, and his occupation is to go into the pit and dig out the silver and the gold. And Jesus Christ, the refiner, came into our pit with a purpose: to bring us out. He came into our pit with something in mind, and he brought us out. And we that are saved have been miraculously rescued from that horrible pit and the miry clay of sin. But there's a problem. There's a problem. We are saved. There's still some of that miry clay upon us. It's still in us. It's still on us. Upon us are the original flaws and imperfections and impurities of our human nature. We can say with Paul, Romans 7, verse 21, when I would do good, evil is present with me. Everywhere I go, though I'm saved, there are always these flaws, these imperfections, these impurities. You see, the disease of sin is still in us, even though we're saved. And we, in addition to that, we walk through a sin-defiled world. And we constantly come into contact with filth and the vileness of sin. The refiner, Jesus Christ, he's well aware of our flaws. He's well aware of our imperfections. He's well aware of our impurities. In fact, he is aware of flaws and imperfections and impurities that no one else is aware of, that we are not even aware of. So he's aware of these things. But it is his aim to make us spiritually perfect. That's what he does. To bring value to our life. To bring usefulness and beauty into our lives. So he continuously and lovingly works upon us. Just as that refiner. Again, picture the refiner. He places that silver, that's you and I that are saved. He places that silver in the pot. And we're told here in verse 3 that he's seated, and he shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. That speaks of his patience. All the patience of Jesus Christ, the refiner. But it also speaks of his attention. As the refiner sits before that pot, he's always paying attention to the silver, to the gold. Jesus Christ is the refiner. We're the silver in the pot. He sits there and he pays attention. There's the watchful eye of the refiner. And the long and continuous process of refining will not take place without the presence, without the attention, and without the skillful work of the refiner. We, the saved, have the presence, have the attention of the refiner all through our life. We have many flaws, more than we can number. Many imperfections. And we're constantly contaminated by sin. And sin brings damage to our lives. It brings loss to our lives. It wreaks havoc in our lives. It brings misery into our lives. But Jesus Christ, the refiner, brought us out of the pit of sin. And he looked at us in grace and mercy. And he saw beyond my sin. He saw beyond all of our rebellion and our defiance and our striving and our contending against him. He saw beyond all of our violations of his holy law. He saw something worth refining. That's love. That's grace. That's mercy. We thank God that he brought us out of that pit of sin. But it did not stop there. That's not where the story ends. He brought us out of that pit. And we have these flaws and these imperfections and all the impurities. But he wisely and for our good puts us into the fire. Puts us into circumstances. Whether they be difficulties, he controls the heat. Whether they be problems or sorrows or pressures, battles, storms, whether they be depths and deserts, He wisely and lovingly turns up the heat. And He tempers the heat to our spiritual needs. He tempers the fire. All the while, He's paying close attention to us. Just as a refiner pays close attention to the silver. And the reason He does this is that He may separate the sin that He hates from the soul that He loves. And He patiently and with perseverance separates that which is impure from our lives. Again, we have innumerable flaws, innumerable imperfections, innumerable impurities. But praise be to God, He's not done with us yet. It didn't end when He took us out of that pit. Because we got all this earthly stuff on us. And as we walk through life, we pick up more and more and more. But that refiner regulates the heat, puts us into that pot. And the earthly stuff, as we begin to melt and liquefy, the earthly stuff rises to the top, and He patiently skims it off. And then He does it again and again and again and again. He does it every single day since He brought us out of that pit. He's been doing that. Oh, the patience of the refiner. He continually works in our lives. Whatever circumstances come into our lives, look at it as the refiner's work. He's doing that. He's allowing that to skim off the impurities. Notice verse 3. He shall purify the sons of Levi and purge them as gold and silver that they may offer unto the Lord an offering in righteousness. The sons of Levi. Why did He mention the sons of Levi? Well, the sons of Levi were the most spiritual of all the tribes. They were the most spiritual. What is the lesson here? The lesson is the most spiritual amongst us have many flaws and imperfections and impurities. The most spiritual amongst us need constant refining. And this is what Jesus does. So thanks be unto God that in this day of darkness, of sin, He is a God that refines His own. In this day of covetousness and materialism and worldliness and self-advancement and apostasy, He is a God that refines His own. In a day when the masses are moving away from God and have little or no thought of God and are under the influence and are governed and driven and shaped by the temporary, He is a God that is constantly refining His own. And in a day when the masses are mired and in and entangled with and imprisoned by the ways and the philosophies and the attitudes of this world. He is a God that is constantly refining His own. So no matter how dark it gets, no matter how wicked it gets, no matter how diabolical it becomes, He is a God that refines His own. So here we are in a world that strives to conform and shape us after its own image. This world constantly trying to shape God's people into the image of the world. But there is a God who in grace and mercy looks beyond all of our flaws, all of our imperfections and impurities, and He sees, just like that refiner, He sees the finished product. He sees the finished product. In a world that strives to conform and shape us to its evil, He has our best interest in mind. And He has a plan. And He has a purpose. And He has a desire. And He has a design to conform us to His own image. And He's working it out in our lives for our good and for His glory. So when you find yourself perhaps in undesirable circumstances, think of yourself as that silver and see the refiner skimming off the imperfections, conforming us to the image of Jesus Christ. We read in Romans 8, verse 29, "For whom He did know, foreknow, He also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of His Son." And the great refiner is in the process right now of conforming us to His own image. We read in 2 Corinthians 3 verse 18, "Changed in the same image from glory to glory." That's taking place right now. We're not there yet. We still have these imperfections, these flaws, impurities, and we pick up more along the way. But He's not done. He's not done. We look at one another and we can see one another's flaws. We can see one another's imperfections. It's like looking in the mirror. And we can see the impurities. But God's not done yet. He's still working. And oh, how we ought to thank God for His patience. One day, the refining process will be complete. And we read in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 49, "And as we have borne the image of the earthly, Adam, we shall also bear the image of the heavenly, Christ." And in Philippians 3, verse 21, "Who shall change our vile body, that it may be fashioned like unto His glorious body, according to the working whereby." That's what He's doing now, the working. He is able to subdue all things to Himself. He saved my soul. But oh, there's still all those flaws. Still all the earthly stuff. But He's still working. He's still working on me and you. And one glorious day, the refining process will be complete. And we read in 1 John 3 and verse 2, now are we the sons of God. And it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when He shall appear, we shall be like Him. That refining process is ongoing. We ought to be coming, getting closer and closer. You know, people say, well, no one's perfect. That's true. But some are closer than others because of this refining process. One day, all the flaws, all the imperfections, all the impurities will be forever gone. And keep in mind that as the refiner works on us, He has that ability to separate the impurities and the imperfections without doing any harm to the silver or the gold, leaving it in intact. Thanks be to God that Jesus Christ is a refiner. And we can say with Job in Job 23 and 10, He knoweth the way that I take. And when He hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. That's true of every child of God. And the reason it's true is because there's this refiner, Jesus Christ. Look at ourselves. Our imperfections, our flaws, our impurities grieve our hearts. But at the same time, we can rejoice. He's not done with us yet. And as you look at one another and you see glaring imperfections, just remember, the Lord's not done with them yet. He's working on them just like He works on you and I. We need to always keep that in mind. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us verse song.